Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Death Row Inmates and Substitution of Counsel Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 5, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Martel v. Clare. The question in this case was whether a state prisoner on death row was entitled to replace his court-appointed attorney with a new court-appointed attorney on the grounds that, according to the prisoner, the court-appointed attorney had failed to pursue potentially important evidence relating to the prisoner's case. The Federal District Court had denied the prisoner's request, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit determined that the interest of justice standard applied in non-capital cases should govern the prisoner's request for substitution of counsel and directed the lower court to reconsider the prisoner's request. In a unanimous opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case for further proceedings. The court agreed that the interest of justice should apply, but held that the Federal District Court had not abused its discretion in denying the prisoner's request for new counsel. To discuss the case, we have Ronald Eisenberg, who is the Deputy District Attorney for the Law Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Eisenberg.
The Supreme Court had a bit of fun with one of the state's arguments in its recent decision in Martel v. Clare. But the last laugh goes against the Ninth Circuit, which was reversed once again in a capital habeas case, unanimously. Clare murdered a young woman in Southern California. He broke into a house, tied the victim's hands behind her back, bludgeoned her in the head, and strangled her to death with a shirt. Her body was found stripped from the waist down. The woman's little daughter was in the house at the time of the crime. That was in 1984, 28 litigation years ago. The last 17 of those years have occurred on federal habeas corpus review. The petition was filed in 1995 and finally denied by the federal district judge in 2005. After years of discovery and briefing on over 40 claims and an extensive evidentiary hearing. Just before the final decision, though, Clare attempted to stave off the inevitable with a new tactic. He demanded that the court replace his attorneys, who were from the well-funded Federal Public Defender's Office, with brand-new lawyers so that they could find some new legal arguments and start the whole process over. The court denied the motion. Clare responded by filing another one, detailing yet more legal claims that he wanted a new lawyer to explore. The court again denied the motion and entered its order, finally denying the underlying habeas petition. Clare appealed, and the Ninth Circuit ruled in his favor. Neither of those events was particularly surprising. What was surprising, however, was the manner in which the Court of Appeals ruled. The court never addressed the claims that had actually been raised in the habeas petition and adjudicated by the district court. Instead, the Ninth Circuit focused only on the last-minute motion for appointment of new counsel. The court held that the district judge had abused his discretion and violated the interests of justice by failing to entertain the new counsel motion. The circuit court provided Clare with new counsel itself, vacated the lower court's rulings, and ordered that the new lawyer could now go back and file a motion to amend the decade-old habeas petition in order to raise new claims for relief. For the state, this result was not better than losing outright. It was worse. Not only would the prosecution be looking at Clare for perhaps another 10 or 15 years of habeas litigation, but now every other habeas petitioner had been handed a new weapon of delay in their own cases. The state challenged the new precedent with a certiorari petition to the United States Supreme Court, which was granted. Now that the case has been decided, some commentary has suggested that the state's litigation strategy has backfired. That suggestion focuses on the threshold question addressed in the court's opinion. What standard should apply when a capital habeas petitioner files a motion for new counsel? Clare's lawyer argued in the Supreme Court that the standard should be just what the Ninth Circuit said it was. A new lawyer should be appointed whenever it is appropriate, quote, in the interests of justice. That broad, vague test would make it relatively easy for capital habeas petitioners to ditch counsel when it looked like things might not be going their way and start over from scratch with a new body in the attorney chair. The state argued that something much stronger was needed to prevent the kind of abuse that occurred here. The question shouldn't be whether the defendant thought the lawyer could be doing a better job, or even whether the judge thought the lawyer could be doing a better job. The question should be whether the defendant had been effectively deprived of counsel altogether, such as where it is discovered that the current attorney does not meet the minimum statutory qualifications for taking on a capital case. On this initial point, the Supreme Court went the defendant's way. The court said that Clare's interest of justice test was the standard laid out by statute for replacement of counsel in non-capital cases, so it ought to be the standard used in capital habeas cases as well. Meanwhile, the court made light of the standard proposed by the state, saying that it came from, quote, well, from nowhere. That, however, was just the first part of the court's opinion. And it's the second part of the opinion, the part that applied the standard for removal of new counsel, that is likely to have the greater impact on capital habeas litigation. In several ways, the court's opinion gives that standard some necessary teeth. First, the court made clear that judges should not tolerate last-minute efforts to derail a decision. Protecting against abusive delay, said the court, is an interest of justice. Moreover, indicated the court, if a defendant does come up with legitimate new legal claims at the end of his habeas litigation, the proper way to pursue them is generally going to be by going back to state court to exhaust those claims, not by trying to graft them onto the existing federal habeas petition. Since a motion to amend the petition in those circumstances could properly be denied, the federal judge was not required to appoint new counsel, quote, just so Clare could file a futile motion. And finally, cautioned the court, even if the district judge improperly refuses to consider a motion for replacement of counsel, the correct remedy is not for the appellate court to appoint its own new lawyer and overturn the denial of habeas relief. What the Ninth Circuit should have done was simply remand the case to the district judge with instructions to entertain the new counsel motion. Faithfully followed, the opinion in Martell v. Clare is going to make it very hard for any future defendant to do what the Ninth Circuit enabled Clare to do in this case. True, the decision won't qualify as a global victory in the development of federal habeas corpus law, but it will serve the state's particular purpose here to neutralize this latest weapon in the war of attrition being fought on behalf of capital murder defendants.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.